Liaison Dangereuse by Christopher Hampton. From the novel by Chaudelot de Laclos. With Kieran Hines as Valmont, Lindsay Duncan as Madame de Merseille, and Emma Fielding as Madame de Tourvel. Les Liaisons Dangereuses, Part 2. Valmont's bedroom in the chateau. Valmont, with his lantern, escorts Cécile into the room. They're both wearing dressing gowns. Cécile looks around the room, a trifle apprehensively.
Much the same as your room, Lucy. But here, Cécile, you'll be able to make as much noise as you like. And the mattress is a little harder.
Is that good?
Oh, yes, that's very good.
Come on.
The first thing you must learn is that there is no necessity whatsoever for haste. Now, as with every other science, the first principle is to make sure you call everything by its proper name.
I don't see why you have to talk at all.
Without the correct polite vocabulary, how can you indicate what you would like me to do? Or make me an offer of something I might find agreeable?
Surely you just say.
You see, if I do my work adequately, I would like to think you'll be able to surprise Monsieur de Jercourt on your wedding night.
Would he be pleased?
Well, of course. He'll merely assume your mama has done her duty and fully briefed you.
Mama couldn't possibly talk about anything of the sort.
Well, I can't think why. She was, after all, at one time, one of the most notorious young women in Paris.
Oh.
Certainly. More noted for her enthusiasm than her ability, if I remember rightly, but nonetheless renowned. There was a famous occasion, before you were born, this would have been, when she went to stay with the Comtesse de Beaulieu, who tactfully gave her a room between your father's and that of a Monsieur de Vressac, who was her acknowledged lover at the time. Yet, in spite of these careful arrangements, she contrived to spend the night with a third party.
Can't believe that. Mm-hmm. It's just gossip.
No, no, I assure you it's true.
How do you know?
The third party was myself.
No.
Well, we can return to this subject later, during the intervals. You asked me if Monsieur de Jercourt would be pleased with your abilities, and the answer is that even if he isn't, I don't believe it would be difficult to find others who would be. Education is never a waste. Now, I think we might begin with one or two Latin terms.
Later the following evening, Madame de Tourvel lingers alone in the salon in the chateau. She drifts about aimlessly, glancing at the door from time to time, then starts briskly to tidy away cards from the card table as Valmont, looking elegant but frail, appears in the doorway.
You're alone, madame.
The others have all decided on an early night. Mademoiselle de Valange in particular seems to be quite exhausted.
I must admit to being rather tired myself. May I help you with these cards?
No, I'm sure the servants will.
I'm glad to have found you. I very much missed our walk today.
Yes.
I fear with the weather as it is, we can look forward to very few more of them.
This heavy rain is surely exceptional.
But in a week, I shall have concluded my business.
I see.
I may, however, be unable to bring myself to leave.
Oh, please. You must.
Are you still so anxious to get rid of me?
You know the answer to that. I must rely on your integrity and generosity. I want to be grateful to you.
Forgive me if I say I don't want your gratitude. Gratitude I can get from strangers. What I want from you is something altogether deeper.
I know God is punishing me for my pride. I'm so certain nothing like this could ever happen to me.
Nothing like what?
Oh, I can't.
Do you mean love? Is love what you mean?
Don't ask me. You promised not to speak of it.
But I must know. I need this consolation, at least.
Oh, I can't. Don't you see? It's impossible.
Of course, I understand. I don't want you to say anything, but I must know. I must know if you love me. Don't speak. You don't have to speak. I just want you to look at me. Just look. That's all I ask.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, for God's sake, you must leave me. If you don't want to kill me, you must help. It's killing me.
My dear. My dear. My dear.
Madame de Duval has been taken ill.
She seems to be having difficulty breathing.
Oh, what is it? It's all right. I'm all right now.
I shall leave her in your capable hands, aunt.
Send Adele for me if I can be of any further assistance.
We must send for a doctor, my dear.
No, no, please. I don't need a doctor. I'm perfectly all right now.
We mustn't take any chances.
No, I just... I must talk to you for a moment. Come and sit by me. I can't speak very loud. What I have to say is too difficult.
Oh, my dear.
I have to leave this house first thing in the morning. I'm most desperately in love.
Oh.
To leave here is the last thing in the world I want to do, but I'd rather die than have to live with the guilt. And I don't mind if I die. To live without him is going to be no life at all. But that's what I have to do. Can you understand what I'm saying?
Of course. Ah, my dear girl. None of this is any surprise to me. The only thing which might surprise one is how little the world changes. Of course, you must leave if you feel it's the right thing to do.
And what should I do then? What's your advice?
If I remember rightly, in such matters all advice is useless. You can't speak to a patient in the grip of a fever. We must talk again when you're closer to a recovery.
I've never been so unhappy.
I'm sorry to say this, but those who are most worthy of love are never made happy by it. You're too young to have understood that.
Why? Why should that be?
Do you still think men love the way we do? No. Men enjoy the happiness they feel. We can only enjoy the happiness we give. They're not capable of devoting themselves exclusively to one person. So to hope to be made happy by love is a certain cause of grief. I'm devoted to my nephew, but what is true of most men is doubly so of him.
And yet he could have... Just now, he took pity on me. I saw it happen. I saw his decision not to take advantage of me.
If he has released you, my dear child, It's because your example over these last few weeks has genuinely affected and improved him. If he's let you go, you must go.
I will.
There. Oh. And even if you had given way, my dear girl, God knows how hard you struggled against it. Then.
Late October. The principal salon in Valmont's Paris house. Valmont sits at his desk writing. He signs with a flourish and looks up as Azelon hurries in, pausing only to bow deeply.
Well, what treasures do you have in store for me today?
A letter to Madame, your aunt, sir, and this one, which Julie managed to get you before it was sealed up, to Madame's confessor.
Oh, very good. Yes, it's excellent. I have a letter for Father Anselm myself. You may deliver them both when you leave.
Yes, sir.
Well, off you go. Keep it up. Madame, my dear boy.
Thank you, monsieur, for everything.
Oh, I was afraid I'd been a sad disappointment to you.
Oh, of course, I'm disappointed not to have seen Cecile for more than a month, but I believe I have you to thank for keeping our love alive.
Oh, as for love, she thinks of little else.
I'd so hoped you'd be able to arrange a meeting between us in the country.
Well, so had I. I'd made all the necessary arrangements, but she was adamant.
I know. She said in her last letter you'd been trying hard to persuade her.
I did what I could. In many respects, I found her very open to persuasion, but not, alas, on this issue.
Yes, she said I couldn't do more myself than you've been doing on my behalf.
She's a most generous girl.
What else did she say?
She said she'd seen signs of a change of heart in her mother. Perhaps in the end she'll come round to the idea of our marriage.
That would be wonderful.
Anyhow, how is she? That's what I've really come round to ask you, monsieur.
Bloomy. I really think the country air has done her good. I think she's even begun to fill out a little.
Really?
And, of course, she sends you all her love. She and her mother will be returning to Paris in about a fortnight, by which time the situation should be resolved, one way or the other. And either way, she's longing to see you.
I don't know how I can bear to go another 2 weeks without seeing her.
We shall have to do our very best to provide some distraction for you.
Without your friendship and encouragement, I can't think what would have become of me.
My dear, if you'd be so kind as to wait in the carriage for a few minutes, there's a matter I must discuss with the Vicomte in private.
Of course. I don't know how I can ever repay you, monsieur.
Don't give it another thought. It's been delightful. Poor boy. He's quite harmless.
Well, I must say, I thought Cecile's letter sounded unusually witty.
So I should hope I dictated it.
Ah, Vicomte, I do adore you.
I have a piece of news I hope you might find entertaining. I have reason to believe the next head of the House of Gercourt might be a Valmont.
What do you mean?
Cecile is 2 weeks late. Aren't you pleased?
I'm not sure. You have rather overstepped your brief.
Well, providing they held the wedding before the end of the year, I don't see what harm can come of it.
No, you're right. The situation does have possibilities. It just makes everything a good deal more chancy. You've used no precautions, then?
Well, I tried to give her a thorough grounding in all aspects of our subject, but in this one area, I'm afraid I may have misled her to some extent. Your aim was to revenge yourself on Gercourt. I've provided him with a wife trained by me to perform quite naturally services you would hesitate to request from a professional, and very likely pregnant as well. What more do you want?
All right, Vicomte, I agree. You've more than done your duty. Shame you let the other one slip through your fingers. I can only assume that's what's happened.
I let her go. Can you imagine? I took pity on her. She was ready, the die was cast, and the bill was paid, and I relented. And what do you know? She vanished like a thief in the night.
Why did you let her escape?
I was moved.
Oh, well, then no wonder you bungled it.
I had no idea she was capable of being so devious.
Poor woman, what else could you expect? To surrender and not be taken? It would try the patience of a saint.
It won't happen again.
What do you mean is you won't get the chance again?
Oh, yes, this time I have a foolproof plan.
What, another one?
Absolutely guaranteed. I have an appointment to visit her at her house on Thursday, and this time I shall be merciless. I'm going to punish her.
I'm pleased to hear it.
Why do you suppose we only feel compelled to chase the ones who run away?
Immaturity?
I shan't have a moment's peace until it's over, you know. I love her. I hate her. I'm furious with her. My life's a misery. I've got to have her so that I can pass all these feelings on to her and be rid of them. Tell me, what's been happening in your life?
Well, Roche is about to fall by the wayside.
But this is excellent.
I have smothered him with so much affection, the poor man can hardly stand up. He's desperately trying to devise some graceful exit.
A long overdue, in my opinion.
And his successor has already been marked out.
Oh. Who's the lucky man?
I'm not sure I care to tell you just at the moment.
Oh, well, in that case, I shall have to conceal from you the details of my foolproof plan.
That seems an acceptable enough bargain.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I think I may have kept our young friend waiting long enough.
I shall call on you sometime soon, after Thursday.
Only if you succeed, Vicomte. I'm not sure I could face another catalogue of incompetence.
Oh, I shall succeed.
I hope so. Once upon a time, you were a man to be reckoned with.
Six o'clock in the evening, a couple of days later. The salon in Madame de Tourvel's house, which is furnished in sombre good taste.
Le Vicomte de Vernon.
Madame de Tourvel makes an effort to stand, but is obliged to sit down again almost immediately. She's trembling. The footman waits for a moment and is surprised to be dismissed with an impatient gesture.
Madame, I understand Father Anselm has explained to you the reasons for my visit.
Yes. He said you wished to be reconciled with me before beginning instruction with him.
That's right.
But I see no need for formal reconciliation, monsieur.
No? When I have, as you said, insulted you, and when you have treated me with unqualified contempt?
Contempt? What do you mean?
You ran away from my aunt's house in the middle of the night. You refused to answer or even receive my letters, and all this after I had shown a restraint of which I think we are both aware. I would call that, at the very least, contempt.
I'm sure you understand me better than you pretend, monsieur. It seemed to me by far
forgive
the most...
Forgive me, I didn't come here to trade reproaches. You know your virtue has made as deep an impression on my soul as has your beauty on my heart. I suppose I imagine that made me worthy of you. What has happened is probably a just punishment for my presumption. My life has had no value since you refused to make it beautiful. All I wanted from this meeting, madame, was your forgiveness for the wrongs you think I've done you so that I can at least end my days in some peace of mind.
But you won't understand. I couldn't do what you wanted. My duty wouldn't allow me to...
It was me you ran away from, wasn't it?
I had to leave.
And do you have to keep away from me?
I do.
Forever?
I must.
Well, I think you'll find your wish that we be separated will succeed beyond your wildest dreams.
Your decision is...
It's a function of my despair. I'm as unhappy as you could ever have wanted me to be.
I've only ever wanted your happiness.
How can I be happy without you? I must hurt you or die. Death it is. I'm sorry. I wanted to live for your happiness, and I destroyed it. Now I want to give you back your peace of mind, and I destroy that too. I'm not used to passion. I can't deal with it. At least this is the last time she'll be calm.
It's difficult when you're in this state, monsieur.
Yes, well, don't worry. It won't last very long.
I understood you now approved of the choice my duty has compelled me to make.
Yes, and your choice has determined mine.
Which is what?
The only choice capable of putting an end to my suffering.
What do you mean?
Listen. I love you. You have no idea how much. Remember, I've made far more difficult sacrifices than the one I'm about to make. Now, goodbye.
No!
Let me go.
You must listen to me.
I have to go.
No!
Why should you be so upset by the idea of making me happy?
Oh, yes. You're right. I can't live either unless I make you happy. I promise. No more refusals. And no more regrets.
The following evening, Valmont bursts into the Marquise's salon.
Success!
At last.
But worth waiting for.
So, it worked, your foolproof plan.
Well, of course, it wasn't foolproof. I was exaggerating to cheer myself up, but I did prepare the ground as carefully as I could. And I must say, considering these last few weeks, my letters were all returned unopened, or rather my letter, since I simply placed it every other day in a fresh envelope, the result has been a genuine triumph.
And the plan?
I discovered, by intercepting her correspondence in the usual way, that she had very wisely decided to change her confidant and was pouring out all her inmost thoughts to my aunt. So, very subtly, and aided by the fact that I looked terminally exhausted as a result of my exertions with Cecile, I began to hint to my aunt that I was losing the will to live, knowing that this would be passed on. At the same time, I began corresponding with her confessor, an amiably dim-witted Cistercian, whom I more or less forced to arrange the meeting with her, in return for the privilege of being allowed to save my soul, a privilege he will now, poor man, be obliged to forego. So, the threat of suicide, the promise of reform.
I'm afraid I can't say I find that very original.
Effective, though.
Tell me about it.
Well, I arrived about six.
Yes, I think you may omit the details of the seduction. They're never very enlightening. Just describe the event itself.
It was unprecedented.
Really?
It had a kind of charm I don't think I've ever experienced before. Once she'd surrendered, she behaved with perfect candor. Total mutual delirium, which for the first time ever with me outlasted the pleasure itself. She was astonishing. So much so that I ended by falling on my knees and pledging her eternal love. And you know, at the time, and for several hours afterwards, I actually meant it.
I see.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Is it? It sounds to me perfectly commonplace.
No, no, I assure you. But, of course, the best thing about it is that I am now in a position to be able to claim my reward.
You mean to say you persuaded her to write you a letter as well in the course of this awesome encounter?
No, I didn't necessarily think you were going to be a stickler for formalities.
Do you know, Vicomte, even if you had arrived with a letter up your sleeve, I'm not sure I wouldn't have had to declare our arrangement null and void.
What do you mean?
I'm not accustomed to being taken for granted.
But there's no question of that, my dear. You mustn't misunderstand me.
What in another case might be taken for presumption between us can surely be accepted as a sign of our friendship and confidence in each other. Can't it?
I've no wish to tear you away from the arms of someone so astonished.
We've always been frank with one another.
And as a matter of fact, I have also taken a new lover who at the moment is proving more than satisfactory.
Oh? And who's that?
I'm not in the mood for confidences this evening. Don't let me keep you.
You can't seriously imagine there's a woman in the world I could ever prefer to you.
I'm sure you're quite willing to accept me as an addition to your harem.
No, you've misinterpreted. What you think is vanity, taking you for granted, it's really only eagerness. I'd sacrifice anything or anybody to you. You know that.
All right, Vicomte. Let's try to discuss this calmly, shall we? Like friends.
By all means.
There's a strange thing about pleasure, haven't you noticed? It's the only thing that brings the sexes together, and yet it's not sufficient in itself to form the basis of a relationship. You see, unless there's some element of love involved, pleasure must lead directly to disgust.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
Now, fortunately, it's only necessary for this love to exist on one side. The partner who feels it is naturally the happier, while the partner who doesn't is to some extent compensated by the pleasures of deceit.
I don't think I see your point.
My point, Vicomte, is that you and I can in no way conform to this essential pattern, and we may as well admit it. Card sharps sit at separate tables.
Yes, and then they compare notes.
Maybe. But without, I think, dealing in new hand.
I can't entirely accept the analogy.
Don't worry. I shan't go back on our agreement. I have to go away for a couple of weeks.
What for?
A private matter.
There was a time when you kept no secrets from me.
Don't you want me to finish what I was saying?
Of course. I'm sorry.
When I returned, and on receipt of this famous letter, you and I will spend a single night together. I'm sure we shall find it quite sufficient. We shall enjoy it enough to regret that it's to be our last, but then we shall remember that regret is an essential component of happiness, and part the best of friends.
I think we should take it one step at a time, don't you?
No. I think we should be under no illusions.
You see, I don't think I've ever been unfaithful to you.
You know, Vicomte, instead of trying to work on me in this, let's be frank, mechanical fashion, you should be thanking me.
What for?
My courage, my stout resistance, my clear-sightedness. I understand, you see, what's going on.
Well, that's more than I can claim.
I know. You may genuinely be unaware of this, but I can see quite plainly that you're in love with this woman.
No. You're wrong. Not at all.
Have you forgotten what it's like to make a woman happy? Or to be made happy yourself?
Of course not.
We loved each other once, didn't we? I think it was love. And you made me very happy.
And I could again. We just untied the knot that was never broken. It was nothing but a temporary failure of the imagination.
No. There would have to be sacrifices you couldn't make and I wouldn't deserve.
But I told you, any sacrifice you ask.
Illusions, of course, are by their nature sweet.
I have no illusions. I lost them on my travels. Now I want to come home. Yes, this present infatuation, it won't last. But for the moment, it's beyond my control.
You'll be the first to know when I return.
Make it soon. I want it to be very soon.
Goodbye.
For the moment.
He's gone.
I thought he'd be here all night. Time has no logic when I'm not with you.
An hour is like a century.
We shall get on a good deal better, Danceny, if you make a concerted effort not to sound like the latest novel.
I'm sorry,
Never mind. Take me upstairs.
Ten days later, Madame de Merteuil's salon. And Danceny lies on the sofa with his head in the Marquise's lap. She plays idly with his hair. Valmont appears in the doorway.
Your porter appears to be under the impression that you're still out of town, madame.
I have, in fact, only just returned.
Without attracting the attention of your porter? I think it may be time to review your domestic arrangements.
I'm exhausted from the journey. Naturally, I instructed my porter to inform casual callers that I was out.
And you here as well, my dear young Danceny. Well, the porter would appear to be having a somewhat erratic evening.
Oh, well,
I'm glad to find you. I've been trying to contact you for some days.
Have you?
Mademoiselle Cécile returns to Paris after an absence of over 2 months. What do you suppose is uppermost in her mind? Answer, of course, the longed-for reunion with her beloved Chevalier.
Vicomte, this is no time to make mischief.
Nothing could be further from my mind, madame.
Go on.
Imagine her distress and alarm when her loved one is apparently nowhere to be found. I've had to do more improvising than an Italian actor.
Oh, but how is she? Is she all right?
Oh, yes. Well, no, to be quite frank with you, I'm sorry to tell you she's been ill.
Ill?
Whether it was brought on by her anxieties is impossible to say, but it seems about a week ago they were compelled to send for the surgeon in the middle of the night, and for a while he was very concerned.
But this is terrible.
Now, calm yourself, my friend. She has been declared well on the road to recovery, and she is convalescing now. But you can imagine how desperate I've been to find you.
Of course. My God, how could I not have been here at such a time? How can I ever forgive myself?
But look, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings. All is well now with Cécile, I assure you. I have it from the surgeon himself, and I shan't disturb you further. It's just that I had a letter, the contents of which I thought might be of interest to the Marquise.
I think perhaps I should spend a few minutes with the Vicomte on a private matter. Why don't you go upstairs? It shan't be long.
But I'm worried about Cecilia.
I don't think there's anything to be done at this hour of the evening. You can send to inquire after her tomorrow.
Well, all right, if you say so.
I do.
I'm sorry, Vicomte.
But don't upset yourself, dear boy. Everything is as it should be.
Thank you. Thank you.
The letter.
I see she writes as badly as she dresses.
I think I'm right in saying that in this case it's the content, not the style, which is the essential. But perhaps there's something else we should discuss first.
I do hope you're not going to be difficult about Danceny. It was a complete coincidence he arrived at the gates at the same moment as my carriage.
Really, my love, this is hardly worthy of you. Given the uncharacteristic mystery you made about the identity of your new lover and Danceny's and your simultaneous disappearance from Paris, I would have had to have been a good deal stupider even than you seem to assume I am, not to have reached the obvious conclusion. If Danceny and your carriage arrived at the gates at the same moment, I imagine the main reason was because he was in it.
You're quite right, of course.
And furthermore, I happen to know that this moment of which we speak occurred 2 days ago.
Your spies are efficient.
So much for being the first to know when you returned. A lesser man might allow himself to get angry.
Such a man might risk losing his ability to charm without necessarily enhancing his power to persuade.
I must say, I'm not surprised you chose to be reticent about so manifestly unsuitable a lover.
My motive had nothing whatever to do with his suitability.
I mean, I know Belle Roche was pretty limp, but I think you could have found a livelier replacement than that mawkish schoolboy.
Mawkish or not, he's completely devoted to me, and I suspect better equipped to provide me with happiness and pleasure than you in your present mood.
I see.
So, is it really true the little one has been ill?
Not so much an illness, more a refurbishment.
What can you mean?
Once she returned to Paris, some money for the porter and a few flowers for his wife were enough to enable me to resume my nocturnal visits, which incidentally, don't you agree, shows up Danceny's initiative in a very poor light. However, the ease of it no doubt made us overconfident, and one night last week, as we were resting after our exertions, the door, which we'd forgotten to lock, suddenly blew open. The most dreadful shock. Cecile threw herself out of bed and tried to jam herself between it and the wall. A sudden severe backache gave way to some unmistakable symptoms. After that, it was a real test of ingenuity getting the surgeon round without giving herself away.
But you evidently succeeded.
Can you imagine, my dear? It turned out Cecile wasn't even aware of being pregnant in the first place. She certainly doesn't devote any undue energy to thinking.
Well, Vicomte, I'm sorry about the loss of your son and Gercourt's heir.
Oh, I thought you'd be pleased. You seemed notably disgruntled about it when I first told you.
Once I got used to the idea, I began to enjoy it. I think you should make another attempt, don't you?
I rather felt the moment had come to pass her on to young Danceny.
No, I'm not sure that would be advisable just now.
Oh, don't you?
If I thought you'd be your old, charming self, I might invite you to visit me one evening next week.
Really?
I still love you, you see, in spite of all your faults and my complaints.
I'm touched. What else will you exact before honouring your obligations?
I have a friend who became involved, as sometimes happens, with an entirely unsuitable woman. Whenever any of us pointed this out to him, he invariably made the same feeble reply. It's beyond my control, he would say. He was on the verge of becoming a laughingstock. At which point, another friend of mine, a woman, decided to speak to him seriously and, most importantly, drew his attention to this linguistic foible of which he'd previously been unaware and told him his name was in danger of becoming ludicrously associated with this phrase for the rest of his life. So do you know what he did?
I feel sure you're about to tell me.
He went round to see his mistress and bluntly announced he was leaving her. As you might expect, she protested vociferously. But to everything she said, to every objection she made, he simply replied, "It's beyond my control."
I must leave you to your lessons.
The following afternoon, the salon in Madame de Tourvel's house. As her footman shows in Valmont, she springs to her feet, unable to conceal her delight.
Oh, you're only 5 minutes late. I get so frightened. I've become convinced I'm never going to see you again.
My angel.
Is it like that for you?
Oh, yes. At the moment, for example, I am quite convinced I'm never going to see you again.
What?
I'm so bored, you see. It's beyond my control.
What do you mean?
After all, it's been 4 months. So, what I say, it's beyond my control.
Do you mean you don't love me anymore?
My love, I had great difficulty outlasting your virtue. It's beyond my control.
It's that woman, isn't it?
You're quite right. I have been deceiving you with Emily. Among others. It's beyond my control.
Why are you doing this?
Perhaps your merciless vulnerability has driven me to it. Anyway, it's beyond my control.
I can't believe this is happening.
There's a woman. Not Emily. Another woman. A woman I adore. And I'm afraid she's insisting I give you up. It's beyond my control.
Oh, you liar!
You're right, I am a liar. It's like your fidelity, a fact of life. No more, nor less irritating. Certainly, it's beyond my control.
Stop it! Don't keep saying that!
Sorry, it's beyond my control.
Oh.
Why don't you take another lover? Just as you like, of course. It's beyond my control.
Do you want to kill me?
Listen. Listen to me. You've given me great pleasure. But I just can't bring myself to regret leaving you. It's the way of the world. Quite beyond my control. Quite beyond my control.
Madame de Merteuil's salon. She is sitting at a small desk writing. Valmont appears in the doorway, unannounced. Madame de Merteuil, with her back to the door, doesn't see him. But she hears a footstep and speaks without turning round.
Is that you? You're early.
I am.
Vicomte.
I wanted to ask you, that story you told me, how did it end?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Well, once this friend of yours had taken the advice of his lady friend, did she take him back?
Am I to understand?
The day after our last meeting, I broke with Madame de Tourvel on the grounds that it was beyond my control.
You didn't?
I certainly did.
Seriously?
On my honour.
But how wonderful of you. I never thought you'd do it.
It seemed pointless to delay.
With the anticipated result?
She was prostrate when I left. I called back the following day.
You went back?
Yes, but she declined to receive me.
You don't say.
Subsequent inquiries I made established that she had withdrawn to a convent.
Indeed.
And she's still there. A very fitting conclusion, really. It's as if she'd been widowed. You kept telling me my reputation was in danger, but I think this may well turn out to be my most famous exploit. I believe it sets a new standard. I think I could confidently offer it as a challenge to any potential rival for my position. Only one thing could possibly bring me greater glory.
What's that?
To win her back.
You think you could?
I don't see why not.
I'll tell you why not. Because when one woman strikes at the heart of another, she seldom misses, and the wound is invariably fatal.
Is that so?
I'm so convinced it's so, I'm prepared to offer any odds you care to suggest against your success. You see, I'm also inclined to see this as one of my greatest triumphs.
There's nothing a woman enjoys as much as a victory over another woman.
Except, you see, Vicomte, my victory wasn't over her.
Of course it was. What do you mean?
It was over you. That's what's so amusing. That's what's so genuinely delicious.
You don't know what you're talking about.
You loved that woman, Vicomte. What's more, you still do. Quite desperately. If you hadn't been so ashamed of it, how could you possibly have treated her so viciously? You couldn't bear even the vague possibility of being laughed at. And this has proved something I've always suspected, that vanity and happiness are incompatible.
Whatever may or may not be the truth of these philosophical speculations, the fact is it is now your turn to make a sacrifice.
Is that right?
Danceny must go.
Where?
I've been more than patient about this little whim of yours, but enough is enough, and I really must insist you call a halt to it.
One of the reasons I never remarried, despite a quite bewildering range of offers, was the determination never again to be ordered around. I decided if I felt like telling a lie, I'd rather do it for fun than because I had no alternative. So I must ask you to adopt a less marital tone of voice.
She's ill, you know. I've made her ill. For your sake. So the least you can do is get rid of that colourless youth.
I should have thought you'd have had enough of bullying women for the time being.
Right. I see. I shall have to make myself very plain. I've come to spend the night. I shall not take at all kindly to being turned away.
I am sorry. I'm afraid I've made other arrangements.
Ah, I knew there was something. Something I had to tell you, what with one thing or another, it had slipped my mind.
What?
Danceny isn't coming. Not tonight.
What do you mean? How do you know?
I know because I've arranged for him to spend the night with Cecile. Now I come to think of it, he did mention he was expected here, but when I put it to him that he really would have to make a choice, I must say he didn't hesitate for a second. I dictated a letter for Cecile to send him as insurance, but as it turned out, there wasn't any need to be so cautious. He knew his mind.
And now I know yours.
He's coming to see you tomorrow to explain and to offer you, do I have this right? Yes, I think so, his eternal friendship. As you said, he's completely devoted to you.
That's enough, Vicomte.
You're absolutely right. Shall we go up?
Shall we what?
Go up. Unless you prefer this, if memory serves, rather purgatorial sofa.
I believe it's time you were going.
No. I don't think so. We made an arrangement. I really don't think I can allow myself to be taken advantage of a moment longer.
Remember, I'm better at this than you are.
Perhaps, but it's always the best swimmers who drown. Now, yes or no? Up to you, of course. I wouldn't dream of trying to influence you. I therefore confine myself to remarking that a no will be regarded as a declaration of war. So, one single word is all that's required.
All right. War.
Dawn on a misty December morning in the Bois de Vincennes. Valmont and Avalon confront Danceny and the manservant. Valmont is making his selection from a case of épée held open for him by Avalon. Danceny waits impatiently in shirt sleeves, épée in hand, shifting from one foot to another. Finally, as Valmont seems to be on the point of making his decision, Danceny can restrain himself no further.
I know it was easy for you to make a fool of me when I trusted you, but out here I think you'll find there's very little room for trickery.
I recommend that you conserve your energy for the business in hand.
He makes his final choice of épée and lays it on the ground, while Azalon helps him off with his coat along with a black glove. Then Valmont and Danceny approach one another and take up the on-guard position. At a sign from Azalon, the duel begins, fierce and determined. Valmont still against Danceny's aggression. For some time, they're evenly matched. Then Danceny succeeds, more by luck than good judgment, in wounding Valmont in his non-sword arm. The duelists resume the on-guard position and begin again. For some reason, connected or not with his wound, Valmont seems to have lost heart, or even interest. And at one point, when the deflection of a too-committed attack by Danceny seems to leave him wide open, Valmont fails to take advantage of what looks like a golden opportunity. Eventually, it's some piece of inattention very close to carelessness on Valmont's part, which allows Danceny through his guard with a thrust which pierces Valmont's body just below his heart. There's a moment of mutual shock, then Danceny withdraws his sword and Valmont staggers a couple of steps towards him before subsiding with a slight gasp to the ground. Asnalong hurries to him, falls to one knee, and lifts Valmont's head.
I'm cold.
That's the servant.
No, no.
Do as I say.
A moment for your tiles, Danceny. What is two things? A word of advice, which of course you may ignore, but it is honestly intended. And a request.
Go on.
The advice is, be careful of the Marquise de Merteuil.
After what she told me about you, you must permit me to treat with skepticism anything you have to say about her.
Nevertheless, I must tell you, in this affair, we are both her creatures.
And the request?
I want you to get somehow to see Madame de Tourvel.
I understand she's very ill.
That's why this is most important to me. I want you to tell her. I can't explain why I broke with her as I did, but that since then my life has been worth nothing. I pushed the blade in deeper than you just to help my boy, and I want you to help me withdraw it. Tell her it's lucky for her that I've gone, and I'm glad not to have to live without her. Tell her her love was the only real happiness I've ever known. I will. Thank you. Look, I...
It's all very well feeling sorry now.
Let him be. He had good cause. It's something I don't believe anyone's ever been able to say about me.
New Year's Eve. Once again, three ladies play cards in the salon of Madame de Merteuil's house. This time, it's Madame de Bollange, Madame de Rosemont, dressed in black, and the Marquise herself. It is Madame de Rosemont's turn, but she's looking away, lost in thought.
Madame, your play.
Oh, forgive me. At my age, it seems reasonable to hope to be spared any further personal tragedies. But two in the space of a few days...
Of course, madame. And I was just thinking when you were last in Paris a year ago. Do you remember that conversation we had? We were trying to decide who was the happiest and most enviable person we knew, and we both agreed it was Madame de Tourvel.
You were with her, were you not, when she died?
I was with her from the day after she ran away to the convent. I shall never forget those terrible sights. When she kept ripping away the bandages after they bled her.
Mm.
Oh, the delirium and the convulsions. How she wasted away. Oh, all the same. I think she might have recovered if that unfortunate young man hadn't somehow managed to let her know the Vicomte, your nephew, was dead. After that, she simply lost the will to live. Apparently, as he was dying, the Vicomte managed to convince Danceny that Madame de Tourvel was the only woman he'd ever loved.
That's enough.
My dear?
I think we should respect the sensibilities of our friend.
Oh, no. I firmly believe that was the truth.
Well, perhaps. I can't see how we shall ever know.
And what news of your daughter? She seems quite adamant. I've appealed to her and pleaded with her, but she won't budge. I did want to ask your advice about this, both of you. Monsieur Jacquot is expected back any day now. Is there nothing to be done? Must I really break off such an advantageous match?
Oh, surely not.
I'm afraid you must.
But why?
I'd rather you didn't ask.
I think you must provide a reason, madame, if you ask our friend to sacrifice so glorious a future.
to be honest with you, madame. And in spite of his crime, I'd rather marry Cecile de Danceny than see my only child become a nun.
As a matter of fact, I've heard from Danceny. He sent me a very strange letter. From Malta.
Oh, that's where he's run away to.
On second thoughts, my dear, I suppose it might be best to defer to Madame's wisdom and experience. Perhaps you should leave Cecile in the convent.
But there must be a reason. This has been a terrible few weeks. But time passes so quickly. A new year tomorrow. And more than halfway through the 80s already. I used to be afraid of growing old. But now I trust in God and accept. I dare say we would not be wrong to look forward to whatever the 90s may bring. Meanwhile, I suggest our best course is to continue with the game.
In Les Liaisons Dangereuses by Christopher Hampton, Kieran Hines played Valmont, Lindsay Duncan, Madame de Merteuil, and Emma Fielding, Madame de Tourvel. Adam Godley was the Chevalier Danceny, Alison Pettit, Cécile, Joanna David, Madame de Volange, Elizabeth Spriggs, Madame de Rosemond, Sarah Jane Holm, Emily, and Charles Simpson Azelon. The narrator was John Moffat, and the music was composed by Ilona Sakach. Technical presentation was by Simon Moorcroft, and the production assistant was Miriam Soupy. Les Liaisons Dangereuses was directed for BBC Radio by Gordon House.